to Aviation Intelligence Weekly with Sarah and Mike, your guide to the aviation industry. Defense just got repriced. Lockheed Martin down nearly 7% for the week, Northrop down almost 6, Kratos off 8, and that's not noise. That's the sector telling you something about where the risk appetite has shifted.
And at the same time, Boeing is up on the week, commercial aerospace is holding in better than you'd expect, and Frontier, of all companies, is the top gainer. This week had some real cross currents.
We're going to dig into all of it. Defense budget anxiety hitting the primes hard, Frontier doing something genuinely interesting with its balance sheet, and the OEM production data is flashing a signal about who's actually executing right now.
Plus, the TSA numbers came in a little soft. We'll tell you what that means for the demand story. Before we get into it, follow the show wherever you're listening, and next week's episode lands on its own.
So let me set the analytical spine here, because this week had a lot of moving parts, and I think it's easy to get lost in the individual names. This week's narrative was a stress test on capital structure. The market's separating companies with financial flexibility from those carrying obligations they can no longer sustain at current rates and current demand.
That's the right frame. You had a carrier literally filing to terminate leases and take the charges now rather than carry the liability forward. That's not a routine fleet transaction. That's a company making a deliberate trade-off between short-term pain and long-term flexibility.
Operationally, what this means is that carriers and suppliers are being forced to make active choices about which assets and which contracts they can afford to hold. The era of just rolling leases forward and hoping demand recovers has shortened considerably.
And for investors, the read is that balance sheet quality is being tested in real time. The names that can absorb restructuring charges without materially impairing liquidity are separating from the ones with far less financial flexibility, and the market is pricing that gap wider.
Exactly. And that separation is showing up not just in the airlines, it's showing up in the defense space too, where some of the primes took significant hits this week that go beyond normal sector rotation.
So the narrative is financial flexibility under pressure, and we've got the data to back it up across multiple subsectors.
The most important signal this week came from the commercial and low-cost carrier space, specifically Frontier's disclosed fleet restructuring. The filing shows they agreed to terminate leases on 13 A320neo aircraft, aircraft that had been contracted through 2032 and 2033, returning them by year-end and eliminating roughly $260 million in operating lease obligations.
That's a significant number. The trade-off is real. They're taking somewhere between $150 and $200 million in charges, a mix of non-cash write-offs and cash costs, to get out from under those obligations now.
Operationally, this tells you that Frontier made a calculation that carrying those aircraft into the next economic uncertainty cycle was more dangerous than absorbing the charge today. That's a strategic read on where demand and fuel costs are headed for thin margin carriers.
For investors, it reframes the Frontier story. The stock was actually up on the week, the top gainer in our universe, which tells you the market read the restructuring as balance sheet positive, not distress signaling.
And that's the key distinction. Let's get into the broader market picture, and then we'll come back to unpack both the low-cost carrier restructuring angle and what's happening in defense in more depth.
All right, let's run through the week. First, TSA checkpoint data. Just over 11.5 million passengers screened this week, which is down 1.3% year over year, and down nearly 3% against the three-year average.
That three-year comparison is the one I'd anchor to. Year over year can get noisy depending on what you're lapping. The fact that we're running almost 3% below the three-year average tells you travel demand is not fully recovered to pre-disruption trend, and with jet fuel still structurally elevated post the Iran conflict, the margin squeeze on carriers isn't getting relief from the volume side either.
Not great for the high fuel cost carriers. Now let's go through the price action, because this week was genuinely interesting in terms of sector divergence. Defense was the big story on the downside. Kratos off about 8% for the week, Lockheed down nearly 7, Northrop down almost 6, RTX off about 5.
And those are full week moves, not single session swings. The sustained pressure across the primes, and Kratos isn't exactly in the same category as Lockheed and Northrop, but they all move together, suggests something sector-wide rather than company-specific.
The most plausible common pressure in the available data was budget anxiety. The defense appropriations picture has been uncertain, and when you layer in the macro backdrop and some rotation out of the high multiple defense names, the selling was broad and consistent.
An aftermarket supplier and services name was also down hard, over 5% for the week. And that tells you the pressure extended into the supply chain, not just the primes themselves.
Now flip to the other side, Boeing up just over 1% for the week. Airlines, United actually up fractionally, Delta essentially flat, Southwest flat. The major carriers held in surprisingly well against that defense sell-off.
And that divergence is meaningful. It suggests the market is not broadly de-risking aviation. It's making a specific judgment about defense budget risk versus commercial aviation fundamentals. Those are two different investment theses right now.
AerCap, the leasing name, only down about 1.5%. When lessors hold in while airlines are choppy, it tells you the leasing market is still tight, which makes sense given how constrained new aircraft delivery timelines are.
The aerostructures names, Howmet and other aftermarket suppliers, were down 2 to 3.25% for the week. Howmet had its biggest single-day drop on Monday, down over 7.5% in that one session, which stood out even against the broader weakness.
What matters is not the individual percentage moves, but the pattern they're drawing. Suppliers that are tied to commercial production are holding better than defense-oriented names, and the market is recalibrating which side of the book it wants exposure to right now.
That's the right read. And then you've got Frontier up about 2%, sitting alone as the week's top gainer in our universe, which is almost a perfect encapsulation of the week's narrative. A thin margin carrier that took a painful restructuring charge was rewarded because the market saw it as a forward-looking balance sheet improvement.
Other low-cost carriers were both down 3 to 4% for the week. Those are the carriers carrying the most financial fragility. And the market is not being subtle about how it's differentiating within the airline group right now.
The filing tone this week was hardened, not across the board, but directionally. Frontier's 8K was a hard choice disclosed clearly. The leadership change at a major cargo operator adds a layer of transition uncertainty at a time when the cargo market is already soft. And the Archer warrant filing is a different kind of hardening, a countdown clock on a capital structure event.
So we've got restructuring decisions, leadership transitions, and an expiration event all in the same week. That's not coincidence in the sense that they share a common cause. It's that the financial environment is compressing timelines and forcing decisions that might have been deferred 6 months ago.
Exactly. The more important signal behind all these individual moves is that the cost of inaction has risen. Carrying a lease you don't need, keeping an executive structure that isn't serving the current strategy, or leaving warrants to expire, all of those inactions have gotten more expensive.
And the stocks are reflecting that calculus in real time.
Let's start with what I think is the most instructive story of the week, and it's Frontier. Because on the surface, a carrier disclosing $150 to $200 million in charges sounds like bad news. The stock finished as the top gainer in our universe. That gap between the headline and the market reaction is exactly where the analysis lives.
And I want to push back slightly on the framing, because I don't think the market was simply applauding the restructuring. My read is that the market was pricing the alternative. What does Frontier's balance sheet look like if they carry 13 A320neos through 2032 and 2033 in an environment where thin margin, low cost carrier demand is already running nearly 3% below the 3-year TSA average?
That's a fair point, and I think you're right that the counterfactual is doing a lot of work here. $260 million in operating lease obligations is not a number you just absorb if demand softens further. The question I keep coming back to is whether the cash component of that charge, they filed a range of $90 to $120 million in cash costs, whether that's manageable against their current liquidity position.
We don't have the liquidity disclosure this week, so I want to be careful not to overstate certainty there. What the filing does tell us is that they structured this as an early return agreement, which means the lessor agreed to take the aircraft back. That's not a given in a market where new narrowbody deliveries are constrained. Lessors have options. The fact that Frontier got a negotiated exit rather than a default proceeding tells you something about the relative leverage in that conversation.
That detail matters more than I think people are giving it credit for. In a slot-constrained, delivery-constrained leasing market, an A320neo is not a stranded asset for the lessor. Frontier could negotiate an exit because the lessor could replace those aircraft. The timing of year-end return is actually well-matched to lessors who want those planes in service for Northern Hemisphere summer 2027.
So the transaction works for both sides, which is why it got done. But here's where I'd add a note of caution on the bullish read. The market rewarded Frontier this week, up about 2%. But the underlying story is still a carrier operating at the thinnest margins in our coverage universe, with fuel costs structurally elevated and volume running below trend. The restructuring improves the balance sheet. It does not fix the revenue model.
Agreed. And I'd frame it this way for anyone tracking the low-cost carrier space. My read is that this filing shows where Frontier is willing to pay for flexibility, and forward demand uncertainty is likely part of that calculus. That's a revealed preference from management, even if we can't know exactly what internal demand models they're running. They made a bet that the cost of flexibility is worth more than the cost of the charge.
The JetBlue Form 4 this week slots into the same thematic bin, though with a very different signal quality. Carol Ann Clements, the chief digital and tech officer, sold shares under a 10b5-1 plan adopted back in April. The 10b5-1 structure matters here. It takes the timing decision out of her hands, so I wouldn't read motivation into when the sale executed.
Right, and we've got six other insider transactions this week across the broader universe that screened as routine. Scheduled plan sales, RSU grants, cashless exercises. None of them individually moved our thesis. But I'll note that the aggregate picture of insider activity this week was predominantly selling side or neutral, with no open market purchases of scale. In a week where some names were down 5 to 8%, the absence of insider buying at those levels is at least worth noting.
I'd be careful not to overread that. Blackout windows, 10b5-1 constraints, and the fact that a lot of executives are still sitting on RSU grants they haven't yet vested. There are structural reasons why open market purchases are rare, even during sell-offs.
Fair. I'm not inferring distress from the absence of buying. I'm noting it as a data point that doesn't contradict the bearish reads, even if it doesn't confirm them. The JetBlue stock was down 3.5% for the week, and it's trading at 463, which is a name under genuine structural pressure. The Clements sale is process, not signal.
Let's shift to the second story that's demanding attention this week, and it's the defense repricing. Because Lockheed down nearly 7%, Northrop down almost 6%, Kratos off 8%, RTX down over 5%, those are not random. And what makes this week's defense move notable is that it was broad and it was sustained across the full week, not a single session event.
The Howmet single day move on Monday is adjacent to this, down 7.5% in one session, which was the biggest single day print in our universe this week. Howmet has exposure to both commercial aerostructures and defense components, so it's sitting at the intersection of two pressures simultaneously.
My read on the defense primes is that the market is repricing two things at once. One is near-term budget uncertainty. Appropriations, timelines have been compressed, and the continuing resolution environment creates revenue recognition risk for primes on programs that need new contract authorizations. Two is a longer cycle question about where defense spending priorities are shifting and whether the traditional platform-heavy primes are as well positioned in a high-drone, high-autonomy threat environment.
And Kratos fits that second story interestingly, because Kratos is supposed to be the autonomy and drone native name in our coverage. If they're down 8% in the same week as Lockheed and Northrop, that tells you this wasn't a rotation from legacy primes into next generation defense. It was a broad de-risking of the entire sector.
Which, I think, argues against the interpretation that this is a structural re-rating of the primes in favor of new entrants. The selling was indiscriminate enough that I'd weight the budget anxiety explanation more heavily than the capability mix story.
I'd argue it's both operating simultaneously and they're compounding. Budget anxiety triggers the sell, and then investors look at their defense book and ask whether they want the exposure at all, given the platform mix uncertainty, and the selling deepens. The causation isn't clean. You get a feedback loop.
The Boeing Form 4 this week was from Stephen Parker, the BDS chief, Boeing Defense. RSU vesting with a tax withholding transaction, so shares were withheld rather than sold on the open market. That's mechanically a disposal, but it's not a discretionary sale. And Boeing was actually up on the week, just over 1%, which is a meaningful contrast to the defense primes.
Boeing's week is interesting precisely because of that contrast. The commercial side of Boeing is carrying the stock right now. The BDS division is under its own pressures, cost overruns, fixed price contract exposure, and yet the overall Boeing price action was positive because the 737 and 787 delivery story is the dominant narrative for the stock at this moment.
That divergence within a single company, commercial up, defense under pressure, is a microcosm of what happened at the sector level this week. The market is not penalizing aviation broadly. It's making very specific judgments about which subsectors have earnings visibility and which don't.
Other defense primes were down 5%+ on the week, while GE Aerospace lost only 1.5%. GE has defense exposure through its engine programs, but the commercial engine backlog is long enough that the market is treating it more like a commercial infrastructure play than a pure defense prime.
RTX, at down 5%, is the outlier in that engine space. And I think it's because RTX carries more direct defense revenue concentration than GE Aerospace at the consolidated level. The market is discriminating within the engine space the same way it's discriminating within the primes.
The leadership change at a major cargo operator sits in a different analytical bucket, but I don't want to let it pass without noting the timing. The departure from a senior international, healthcare, and supply chain role, effective September 1st with a transition through March, is a significant operational handoff at a moment when cargo operators are already navigating softer volumes and the stock is already down nearly 3% for the week.
The cargo red this week covers the two major integrators, one down about 2 and 9, the other down about 2.5. Neither had a dramatic single day move, but both trended lower across the week, consistent with a broader soft macro tape. But this week's data does not establish a cargo demand inflection.
What would change the risk reward on the cargo names is a durable uptick in global goods trade, which we're not seeing evidence of this week. What would change the risk-reward on the defense primes is a clear budget resolution, a full-year appropriation with program-level clarity. And that's also not visible on a near-term horizon.
And what would change the read on Frontier is whether the revenue environment stabilizes enough that the freed-up balance sheet capacity can actually be deployed into profitable flying, rather than just used to service the remaining obligations they're carrying.
Those are the three forward conditions I'd be watching to see if this week's market judgments get confirmed or reversed. The data right now is pointing in a consistent direction. Financial flexibility is being priced, capital structure risk is being penalized, and the commercial aviation fundamentals are holding up better than the defense and cargo complex. Whether that holds depends on what happens with budget decisions and with demand.
So let me put the central tension of this week directly on the table, because I think it's the question that separates a useful read from a surface level one. Is what we're seeing in the defense sector this week, Lockheed down nearly 7, Northrop down almost 6, Kratos off 8, is this cyclical positioning, a rotation out of a sector that's had a strong run and is now facing a budget timing headwind? Or is this structural differentiation, the market beginning to reprice the platform mix permanently in a world where autonomy and unmanned systems are redefining what a defense dollar buys.
My read is that it's primarily cyclical right now, and the evidence I'd point to is that Kratos sold off with the legacy primes. If this were a structural rotation away from platform-heavy programs toward autonomy-native companies, Kratos should have been the beneficiary, not a co-victim. The fact that the selling was indiscriminate argues for a macro-driven de-risking event rather than a capability mix judgment.
I don't fully disagree, but I'd push back on the clean version of that argument. The indiscriminate selling tells us the trigger was cyclical. Budget anxiety, appropriations uncertainty, maybe some quant factor rotation. But indiscriminate selling can mask a structural re-rating that plays out over multiple quarters. You don't get clean cyclical versus structural. You get a cyclical trigger that lands on top of an existing structural concern and amplifies it.
That's fair, and the RTX move supports your read in an interesting way. RTX down over 5%, while GE Aerospace only lost about 1.5%. That gap isn't explained by budget timing alone. GE Aerospace is being treated as a commercial infrastructure story with a defense kicker. RTX is being treated as a defense prime with a commercial kicker. Same engine business, different narrative frame, meaningfully different price action.
The aftermarket services move is the data point I keep coming back to. MRO services down over 5.5% for the week, with a 5% single day drop on Tuesday. An MRO and services name is not a prime contractor in the traditional sense. It's a services and parts business. If this were purely a budget appropriations trade, you'd expect the primes to lead the selling and the services names to lag. When the MRO names move in tandem, that tells me the market is pricing a scenario where the entire defense spending ecosystem contracts, not just front-end program authorizations.
And that changes the recovery timeline. If the market is pricing a broad defense spending slowdown rather than a transient appropriations delay, then the bounce back condition isn't just a clean CR or a full year budget. It requires actual obligation rates to recover at the program level. That takes longer.
Which brings us to where I think the two readings actually converge. Even if the trigger is cyclical, the company's best positioned to absorb a cyclical hit are the ones with the most contract backlog visibility and the longest program lives. Lockheed's F-35 franchise doesn't disappear in a budget uncertainty quarter, but the multiple it trades at can compress meaningfully if investors decide the certainty of that backlog is lower than previously priced.
So the base case is that this week's defense sell-off is a cyclical derating driven by budget timing anxiety, and the primes recover when appropriations clarity arrives. But the key risk is that the structural question about platform mix and autonomous systems doesn't get resolved by a budget vote, and the multiple compression in the legacy primes turns out to be the beginning of a longer re-rating rather than a temporary discount.
That's the frame I'd carry into next week, and it sets up the watch items directly, because several of the data points we're waiting on could distinguish cyclical from structural within the next few sessions.
Watch. Defense appropriations commentary from any member of the armed services or appropriations committees, because it will confirm or contradict the budget timing thesis driving the prime sell-off, and it's the single fastest mover for names like Lockheed, Northrop, and RTX.
Watch. Archer Aviation warrant expiration on September 16th, but specifically any public communication from Archer about the warrant exercise rate before that date, because it will confirm or contradict whether the company's retail capital base is engaged enough to execute the conversion, and it has direct implications for near-term dilution and liquidity.
Watch any cargo volume data or freight index releases touching the September week, because it will confirm or contradict whether the weekly softness across cargo operators is a demand inflection or just end of summer seasonal noise. And that distinction matters for how you read the leadership transition at the major cargo integrator.
Watch TSA checkpoint figures for the coming week, specifically whether the year-over-year gap widens or closes from this week's 1.3% decline, because it will confirm or contradict whether the subtrend travel demand we're seeing is the start of a demand, deceleration, or a one-week anomaly ahead of the post-Labor Day reset.
Those four items do a lot of heavy lifting. If you get budget clarity, a clean Archer conversion, stabilizing cargo data, and TSA numbers that bounce back toward trend, this week's sell-off starts to look more like a temporary derating than the beginning of a deeper structural move. If you get the opposite on two or three of those, the sell-off has more room.
Which is exactly why we frame them as confirmations or contradictions rather than predictions. The data will speak, so let's synthesize the week before we close.
The through line that connected every story this week, from Frontier's lease restructuring to the defense prime sell-off to the cargo operator leadership change to the Archer warrant clock, was that the cost of inaction has risen sharply, and the market is rewarding companies that are making deliberate choices about capital structure, even painful ones, while penalizing sectors where visibility into near-term cash flows has deteriorated.
The structural question the week leaves open is whether the defense repricing is a transient budget timing event, or the leading edge of a longer re-rating that the platform-heavy primes haven't fully priced yet. And we won't know the answer to that this week, or probably next week either.
And the thing that would change the picture most decisively is budget appropriations clarity on the defense side and a demand inflection, even a modest one, on the commercial side. Right now, those two catalysts are moving in opposite directions, which is exactly why you're seeing the sector divergence the market printed this week.
It was a week that asked harder questions than it answered, and I'd argue that's the most useful thing a week of market data can do.
If the depth of this week's analysis is the kind of work you want every week, follow the show. It's the fastest way to make sure next week's episode finds you automatically.
This has been Aviation Intelligence Weekly. The analysis here is for informational purposes only and does not constitute financial, investment, or legal advice. Nothing discussed should be construed as a recommendation to buy, sell, or hold any security. All views expressed are those of the hosts and are based on publicly available information. Past performance is not indicative of future results. Always consult a qualified financial professional before making investment decisions.
Welcome to Aviation Intelligence Weekly with Sarah and Mike, your guide to the aviation industry. Want the inside track on aviation's biggest players? Aviation Intelligence Weekly brings you expert analysis of airline earnings, breaking industry news, and deep dive company histories. From American Airlines to Boeing, we cover the business of flight every week. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen.